Is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and my co-host, the stunningly gorgeous Jill Sirkin. Although she's not that gorgeous, she's just stitched me up.
Hello.
Again.
Hello. Yeah. Well, I only mentioned, you know, just in passing about the cakes.
The cake, yeah, and it wasn't even me that was eating it.
Cakes.
I've had a tweet from the Romney Resource Centre, and they say, hello, Paul. We've got all the dates for our short one-day response courses for 2020. Starting in January, going all the way through to May, we have a wide variety of training courses on offer and all fully funded. Contact Romney Resource Centre to find out more. And they've got all kinds of courses. I can tell you a few of them. Excuse me.
So there's cake crumbs, isn't it?
There's health and safety in the workplace. Level 2 food safety and catering. Level 2 principles of manual handling. Emergency first aid at work. So, and there's lots of those courses running through 2020. If you want to find out about any of them, they're all fully funded. So there's no costs involved. If you follow the Romney Resource Centre on the Twitter, Romney Resource, or go to their website, which is romney-resource.co.uk. What you got, Jules?
There's a Kenwood Trust James Bond-themed fireworks spectacular.
All there is.
Which is Thursday the 7th of November. And it's featuring a performance from Marylebone Jelly. It's an event. Who's Marylebone Jelly?
They're a band.
Oh, they sound great. What kind of music?
Don't you know nothing?
No, I don't know about Marylebone Jelly. It's an event to not be missed, and it's 4:30 to 8:30. The gates open at 4:30 p.m. Fireworks are 7:30, and the event finishes at 8:30. And it's at the Kenwood Place, Kenwood Road, Yalding. And you can book at Eventbrite. Are the details on Kent Business Radio yet?
Not for that, no. You need to go to the Eventbrite.
Okay, so it's www.eventbrite.co.uk with a little /e/annual fireworks spectacular tickets.
Fantastic.
There's the Slope of Friday Christmas special luncheon, business networking luncheon, on the 6th of December at 2 p.m.
Is Pete Allen going?
Peter Allen is actually on a wine tasting, and he's the one that keeps nagging me to do this. And okay. Then I sent him the date, and he says, I'm going wine tasting.
Pete's not having a good time right at the moment.
Why? What's happened?
Because he posted on Saturday morning, South Africa, ha ha, snowballing in ovens chance.
And?
That didn't work.
Oh.
Because we got slaughtered by the South Africans. Good. And Leslie and the team in reception are...
South African. They are. They're from Joburg.
I've just noticed, Jules, did you do this deliberately?
What?
The best before on this licorice bar that you bought me.
No.
Is the 22nd of August, 2020.
That's really bizarre.
That's my birthday.
That is bizarre. How bizarre.
Yeah.
Keep the wrapper, frame it.
There you go.
I do get you amazing presents.
So I can keep it until my next birthday.
It won't happen, will it?
No.
It's not going to happen. It's already down your throat, half of it, I'm sure. Can I just continue? So Slope of Friday.
Not sorry.
It's a business networking lunch where we go to some beautiful restaurants and I negotiate a great price with all the chefs that I love, lovely chefs that I know. So it's the 6th of December at 2 p.m. It's at the Empire Rooms in Ramsgate, which is part of the Royal Harbour Hotel there on Ramsgate seafront. You can contact me at Jules Sirkin, and it's 6th of December, as I said, 2 p.m, and we mingle over little nibbles and drinks, and then we sit down about 2:30, and then we end about, what time, Paul?
About 4 days later.
What's the name of the...
On Twitter, it's Slope Off Friday, at Slope
Off
Friday.
Name.
I shall follow you. Perhaps we could do one at your mountaineering place, you know. Well, I call it mountaineering.
Climbing place, yeah.
Yeah, the climbing experience.
Definitely.
Yeah, because you've got a cafe as well.
We have.
Do you charge corkage?
We're just applying for our licence, actually.
Really?
So, yeah.
Oh, well, I can sort that out.
Last Prosecco.
Talking about such things, and I'm sure... Robert's going to be offering a similar thing with the climbing experience. I just had a tweet from the Right Event, spelt with a W.
Okay.
Right Event, yeah. We'd love a shout out for our 2-for-1 quad biking promotion. Back for Christmas 2019 at our site in Westmoreland, The Right Event. TheRightEvent.co.uk for all the details on the ultimate Christmas gift, quad biking. So do check that out.
Oh, I meant to ask Robert. So if we wanted a voucher for someone, we could do that, couldn't we?
Yeah, have online gift cards, and we're doing physical gift cards that you can buy in the centre as well. We have a small retail concession as well. So if you want to buy small things for Christmas or a day's climbing or that type of thing.
Yeah. Fantastic. Cool. Right. Well, they've opened the booking for the Kent Business School. That's the University of Kent. Kent Business School is organising the third Kent Business Summit, held at the University of Kent Sibson Building on the Canterbury campus on Friday the 10th of January from 9 until 4:30. The event is made possible through the generous support from head sponsor Crowe and media partner KM Media Group. Over 400 Kent business leaders, local government, decision makers and academic experts are expected to attend the county's flagship event to work constructively on tackling regional challenges and how to promote Kent as a sustainable, innovative, forward-thinking and outward-looking county. Full details of the day's programme and a booking link can be found at www.kentbusinessradio.co.uk/KBS. So do check that out. All the details are on the website, and then there's a link through to the actual programme, who all the speakers are, what the format of the day is, and to book your ticket.
Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Will you be joining us in December at the Women in Business Christmas Luncheon at the beautiful at Eastwell Manor on the Twitter? It's Tuesday, December the 3rd, 11:15 until 2:30. And you can find out more by going to kentwomeninbusiness.co.uk. So all the Christmas parties are starting, aren't they?
They are indeed.
So lucky we've lost weight already, aren't we?
Absolutely,
We're just naked, you and me, aren't we?
Yeah.
All ready for the Christmas festivities.
As long as it isn't like last year, I said to my MD, when's our Christmas party? And he went, last week.
He hadn't bothered to tell you.
No, he didn't invite me.
Oh, that's terrible. That's not very nice.
That's not nice, is it?
Yeah. There's a Marsh Networking Over Coffee, 6th of November. That's manana.
Manana, tomorrow.
Yeah, manana. 10 to 12 GMT, Sankport Arms, 1 High Street, New Romney. And it's go to marshnetwork.co.uk for details.
Cool. Thank you.
Can we talk to Alan now?
I thought we were going to talk to Jenny first.
Oh, you can't, because I've got my video ready for Alan.
Sorry, Jenny. Yeah. She's all geared up, ready to go, and now we've
I can retype it.
No. Now we can change the entire format and change everything just to save Jules typing anything.
It's very hard, all this video laugh.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things about that is it shows you how much attention Jules pays to me when we're planning, formatting the show, doesn't it? Yeah.
Oh, no, I went out, didn't I, that time? When you're talking.
It shows how much attention she pays when we're planning the show. I'll tell you what, why don't we talk to Alan?
Let's talk to Alan.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Monkey Show for the very first time, Alan F. Saunders. The F is important, and we'll explain why in a moment. And Alan, how do you... I want to say you're a metal sculptor. How do you define yourself?
It's actually very difficult because I do a lot of metal sculpture, but I do all sorts of things. I actually trained as a blacksmith. I did a design blacksmithing course many years ago.
Oh, wow.
In Hereford.
Hang on, isn't that horses? Hoof?
No, that's a farrier.
Oh,
yeah. It's very, very different.
Always get those words.
Yeah, well, most people confuse that, don't they? A blacksmith is someone that makes stuff out of metal. We you don't see them very often. I live in Tenterton. And we actually have a blacksmith in Tenterton,
right,
which is highly unusual. And he knocks out really nice stuff like dog grates and things like that.
And your little things you'd keep by the fire, wouldn't you? Your poker and all that sort of stuff.
Fire irons, yeah.
Fire irons, that's the word.
But of course, blacksmiths do lots of stuff with metal. What inspired you to do that, Anna?
It was a long time ago now, actually. I started first... about 20 years ago, I was doing a job I wasn't particularly finding creatively sort of getting much out of. So I just sort of took myself aside and said, well, you know, what would be interesting? What's something creative to do? Mm-hmm. And I used to be into old motorbikes.
All right, okay.
And I thought, well, maybe something in the line of metalwork. So I looked around what was going, and I just did a night class in basic welding.
Right.
And on that,
because you need that with an old BSA Bantam or an AJS or what kind of things were you into?
Yeah, well, my first bike was a BSA. It was a 350 BSA, an old ex-Army B40.
Jenny and I glaze over now. I know nothing about motorbikes.
One of my first motorbikes was an ex-Army BSA Bantam.
Right.
Yeah. And the clutch cable snapped about 3 days after I got it. Ooh. And I thought, I can't be bothered. So I just used to smash it in gear without the clutch.
That'll work.
Yeah. And I was coming down. I used to live in Bested. And I was coming down Yeoman Lane, and there's a village pond there, and it was winter time, and I was coming down there, and I smashed it into third gear, and as I smashed it, I kind of was a bit heavy handed with it, and I got a bit of a wobble on, and I lost control of the bike, and the bike slid me and the bike straight into the pond, which had a covering of ice, and of course the engine was so hot that it melted the ice, and we just went bloop and sunk.
No.
Yeah.
How are the ducks?
Oh, the ducks loved it. It warmed it up no end. Yeah.
Is the bike still there?
It probably is. Yeah, it probably is. No, actually, I fished it out. Because the thing about those old two-stroke bikes is they went on forever. You could abuse them because there was hardly any parts to them, weren't there?
Can we have another show on
bikes? Sorry. Yeah.
Can we talk about metal?
No, hold on. You'll like this. I also had an AJS, a James, and a Villiers bike. And the Villiers had been a racing bike in the 50s. Until the Japanese rocked up and blew everybody away, and then the guy that owned it put it on the road, and I had that on for a while.
Were these the bikes where the
Robert's
clutch
in now
was with the foot? Because it changed, didn't it?
Yeah,
The
clutch was on the handlebar on a.
Right.
Yeah, this is such a boys' conversation, isn't it?
Yeah.
But a
friend of mine had a really old, I mean, it must be worth a fortune now, a stick shift Indian motorcycle.
That's serious money.
Yeah. Nowadays, that would be worth an absolute fortune. Yeah.
Well, I'd love a Sagaloo right now.
Would you? Frankly. Yeah. Anyway, sorry about that. Deflecting into motorbikes for a little while. So you went into blacksmithing as kind of a change of direction, really.
Yes, I did this night class in welding, and in that there was some basic blacksmithing, and I just found heating up metal and forming it really interesting. Mm. So I went and did a design sort of blacksmithing course in Hereford, which is a very good course there, which they still do, by the way.
So it's quite a well-known course, is it?
It is.
You're a blacksmith type.
Yeah, I think it's they've changed now their Hereford rural craft. College now, but then as things go, money was tight, so I was doing lots of other things as well. So I did lots of part-time jobs until just more recently I've got into it more full-time, and now I'm doing it full-time.
And you're designing, we've got lots of examples in the studio, and I'm sure Jules is filming them, some small, some large, and you've also got some really huge installations, and you have currently one that's hanging around in your garden that I saw on Twitter the other day. Most of the pieces that you're making, Alan, are they pieces that you've just made to suit yourself, or are they made for commission?
Right. Well, what I thought I'd do is I'd bring something, a piece that I'm working on at the moment. There's a commission, specific commission.
Okay.
So a work in progress. I thought it'd be interesting to show you.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of the panel here.
Let me describe it, because, I mean, Jules is going to video it on Twitter, but for those of you listening on the radio, it's about 3 foot square.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a square frame, and it's obviously around a spider's web kind of thing, because there's a spider right in the middle of it. See, there's no flies on me. So explain the piece to us.
Well, I've got a client who's, she's got a lovely garden, but she looks after a grandchild 2 days a week, and it's got a couple of spaces where the young child could get into some places that would be not good for it. So I've made a gate, and then this is a panel to cover up one of the spaces. And I just thought, well, it'd be nice, rather than just have a sort of prison bars for this young child, to have something interesting. And this one's based on the lady's got a pond with a... So it's, on the left is an arum lily.
Right.
And then there's the pond where there's a frog in the pond. There's a spider on one of the leaves of the arum lily, and then in the far corner it's linked to the spider's web, and then we've got two dragonflies flying round the pond. very abstract. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know whether you see it.
No, get it.
And then there's my version of a bee on the top left, just near the arum lily
flower. That is a
flower.
Very strange-looking bee, Alan.
And this is going to form part of a barrier, part of a gate?
It's a panel. So that one's going to be a solid panel in just to block up one opening. And then there's just a few feet along, there's another opening where I've already put a gate in, which was based on a... that's on the lady's garden, and so there's some animals, and then there's some vegetables and stuff in there.
I love it. So it's a practical piece of art, and that is fabulous, isn't it? Because it has a very practical, down-to-earth basis, but it's actually just not a boring gate with some bars in it or a fence with some bars in it. I absolutely love that, and I can see what you're doing with that. So that's a commission piece that you've done. You've got three other pieces that you bought us, Alan. Just talk us through what you've got.
Well, this is an abstract figurative sculpture, so it's a sort of... how do you describe it? It's a male sort of standing figure, very minimal, abstract. But I brought it in because it's
almost stick man like.
Yeah. Well, it's...
What you'd be if you didn't have them capes?
this is about 3 foot high, but this is a small version. I've also got one that's about 8 foot high, and it's considerably heavier and bigger. But what I've brought it in for is because it's got some blacksmithing processes. The piece we just looked at, the panel, is all cut and welded, but this has got some forged steel in it. So it's got basically the pelvis is formed by sort of a cross member that's been forged. I put a dish it with under a power hammer with a ball, and then the hips are sort of made out of dished steel, and then I've forged the spine back out of a piece of round bar that I've forged straight at one point, and tapered it, and the legs, the arms and the backbone basically are tapered, which is a basic forging technique.
Where do you get your materials from, Alan? Is it predominantly recycled or...?
not catalytic converters, no. it's a mixture, yeah. Well, mostly it is recycled. I've got... a friend of mine has a metal fabrication workshop. He makes lots of electric gates and things, so I rate his skip. There's a... nice guy at Avery Engineering in Maidstone, who's he's let me rate his skip as well. But if there's a sort of a piece of metal I haven't got, well, I have to buy that. But most I have been able to find most of the stuff I've got, which I really like. That it can be, it's so recyclable.
Yeah. And your raw material cost is relatively low.
It's very low. Yeah. Well, steel's pretty cheap anyway, to be honest, depending on what it is.
Right.
But when it's when you just get it from a skip, it's incredibly cheap.
That's right. It's
incredible,
isn't it? So you've got two smaller pieces here as well, which could be described as kind of indoor pieces, if you like.
Well, they can be either, actually. Yeah. I mean, this one on the left, the first one, is an artichoke, which I've actually kept indoors because it didn't rust too much, because that's just made out of sheet steel mostly.
Right.
And I thought it's just slightly rusted, and I thought I'd keep that effect because I thought that looked quite good. Whereas the other piece is sort of a tripod piece that's completely rusted steel, and this has been outside.
Right.
But equally, that could be indoors as well. So it depends what... if people don't mind things getting rusty, then they can be outside.
As you say, I mean, the rust can add something to it, can't it?
A patina.
It does, yeah, it does. And I mean,
artichoke.
I wanted to say avocado shows you how middle class snowflake is that, my avocado mash. The artichoke, the rust makes it, it adds to it, doesn't it? It gives it that pattern. So where do you get your inspiration for these pieces, Alan?
Well, I do a lot of drawing. Right. And I love drawing plants and things.
Do you really draw us at doodling?
No, no, proper drawing.
He's
no,
an artist.
I doodle. I doodle. Right.
No, he's a proper artist.
He's a right artist.
He is a proper artist.
I actually did a short figurative sculpture course, so we did a lot of life drawing.
Right, okay.
So, I've done
quite a bit. Do you take this work into schools and that to sort of inspire? I'm thinking it would inspire some kids, you know, just go in a different direction.
Not specifically this. I actually did teach last year. The organisation a friend of mine works for that has volunteers from companies come and they'll work for a worthy sort of cause for half a day or a day, and they had some volunteers at a TV station that. Help with some children from in a London school to make. We basically made a sculpture out of recycled plastic bottles, bottles.
Yep.
And that was really inspiring because the children were just brilliant with what they came up with. I showed incredibly way more creative than me. And I showed them basically how to make like flowers out of just chopping up some bottles and then say, right, you can paint it. And what they came up with was just fantastic.
I don't know, do they still teach metalwork in schools these days?
I don't think so.
They don't even do cookery anymore, do they? Domestic
DT,
science.
They call it, don't they? DT.
Yeah, design technology. Yeah, they do. Well, when I was a kid, we did metalwork and woodwork, basically. Yeah.
Making screwdrivers.
In the school I went to, it was mostly how to unweld a safe, but we won't go there. we used to do silly stuff, like you make a tea caddy spoon and that kind of nonsense.
But we had domestic science for women only, girls only.
Yeah.
And we learned a pineapple upside down cake, and I've never ever made it again. Who would ever eat a pineapple upside down cake?
Oh, I quite
cake?
Like it.
Would you? Yeah. But you only ate half that cake.
Yeah. But it's early, you're all of it.
But it's a shame that we don't teach those basic skills of metalwork and woodwork. They do design technology, and I know that they work in acrylics and design stuff on lathes and machines, but that hand crafting things is it doesn't suit everybody, obviously. It's got that lovely feeling to it, isn't it, working something like metal or wood, where you're taking an inner lump of something and making it into something that people can appreciate for what it is and what you've put into it. And I love the pieces that you've got here.
So how do you actually showcase this? Because I met you at Mount Ephraim, didn't I? So
out walking a dog or something, was it? Yeah, and you sorted him again.
He had a little stall. He had a stand with all his sculptures.
A little stall? Well, he was sat down, was he?
Yeah. A stand.
Oh, I see.
A stall.
Oh, I see. An STALL.
That's my Essex accent. And Alan was actually, it was your friend that was there manning the thing, and I was chatting to him first.
Okay. Yeah.
And you had all your beautiful sculptures, and I just thought they were so unusual, and I'd never seen much, you know, anything like it. And I love the fact that there's the rust and the pattern on it and different, and the character. And obviously, when you have one of these in your garden, the character's going to change over the years, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, for a start, it will, as you say, it'll change the rust. And, some of them will gradually, over time, sort of the rust will really eat away at them. But depending on what it is. But I think that's if it's thin metal like this, it will gradually rust away. But that's sort of interesting because it's never going to be the same year in, year out.
Absolutely, I find art like that more interesting than anything else. And one of the things I like seeing things made out of other things. Yeah. So a friend of mine is a graphic designer by trade, but he loves his art, and he did a whole series of pictures and drawings of what you would call Heath Robinson kind of contraptions, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Which were fabulous. And he sold them as corporate works of art. Yeah. Which is really clever. And that inspired me to think about things like, you know, if you go into a corporate headquarters of a computer company or something, they've just got computers there, you could make really nice pieces of art out of old circuit boards and IC chips and stuff like that, in the same way that you can make things out of old bits of motorbike or bits of car, you know, with a speedo or a cable assembly or something. You can make all kinds of interesting things out of other things. And I think what you're doing kind of falls into that category where you're making art from bits of reclaimed metal. It's just beautiful. It's fantastic.
And are you selling to, you know, obviously people with your big, what I called dinosaur that I put on my Twitter. So if you want to go onto Jules Serkin, you'll see one of Alan's huge things. I mean, how big is that? It looked massive.
Oh, crikey.
Feet, isn't it?
Sorry? Feet, it's about 4 feet long.
Yeah, so that's a huge statement piece. So somebody with a big garden, mm-hmm. presumably hotels and places like that, that want to have something gorgeous in the garden for guests to look at.
Well, anyway, really, I mean, I have got a couple of pieces at, do you know the Tithe Barn in Lenham?
Yes.
Well, I've sold them one of my benches, which they've got outside the barn, the lovely barn there. Which
is that sit onable or is it?
Oh yeah, totally about? Sit. No, it's, that one is that metal? Is very practical. Sorry,
metal.
Metal. Yeah, it's all metal, and that's nice to sit on. And they've also got a couple of my abstract sculptures in their pond, which they'll
Oh, that would look lovely.
And it does look
I
lovely
want pictures there. Yeah. Well, let's meet for tea there, all of us.
Can I give a little shout out to them, actually?
Because
there's going to be on from the 15th of November, there's an event there.
Right. I'm doing that as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Great. It's
now you know each other.
It's indeed. It's
so exclusive.
It's actually for a charity. It's for Breast Cancer Kent. It's,
right.
And it's handmade midwinter market.
Okay.
So there's the private view, but actually everyone's allowed able to come along to it for this event. It's from 5 to 7:30 on Friday evening, and then from Saturday and Sunday it's 10 to 4 p.m. So
what's it called?
It's called handmade.
In Lenham,
it's Tithe Barn.
Yeah.
And Alan, if we want to, I'm aware we're running out of time, so if we want to get hold of you and buy your pieces, have you got a phone number you can give us?
Yeah, it's the phone number is 07942339467.
Brilliant. And Alan's newly on Twitter. You'll see him on our timeline at Alan F. Saunders.
And he's got a website?
No website, but he's on Facebook.
Okay, I've put a link to something on the bunker page, so I must have linked it to his Facebook page. Yeah.
Can I, if we run out of time, can I just quickly mention?
Yeah, of course.
You were saying about it's a shame people, children aren't doing metalwork at school anymore.
Mm.
I'm going to be doing some lessons.
Brilliant!
I've got a few people booked in, so probably there'll be spaces in the new year.
Okay,
for people.
If you let us know by dropping us an email, then we'll promote that on the show.
Oh, brilliant!
Yeah, because I think that's brilliant. You know, the range of things that people can try and do is always inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we're always looking for different things to try.
Climbing
and to
walls.
Anything. It does. You know, there's no harm in trying anything. One or two people will take to it and the rest will go off and run away. So, you know, let us know what you're doing and we'll certainly look at it. And I thank you so much for that. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and to see some of the fabulous pieces that you've got here. And keep on keeping on doing what you're doing. I've had a tweet as well, actually, my motorbike story. Joe Humphrey said, oh, that's funny. I once crashed into that pond on Versed and Green as well. Yeah, it's a bit of a magnet, Joe, isn't it, actually? That's the problem with it, where it is. It's outside the Whitehorse pub as well.
Mm,
yeah, indeed. So you normally got an audience as you do it, which is quite good.
But it's quite spectacular.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we talk to our next guest now?
We need to, yeah.
Let's go straight into that, really.
Yeah. Well, I need to just get my thing up.
And do you need to set it up?
Yeah.
Should we wait for you to set it up?
You
spontaneity.
Yeah. It's she's just so slow with us, isn't she? While she's setting it up, and while Jenny is good in her loins, ready to speak, I'm going to tell you about some stuff that's happening in Canterbury over 2020. Visit Canterbury prepares to promote the city internationally for 2020. There's loads of things happening, and I'm just going to flash through them quickly. There's Becket 2020. It's marking 850 years since Thomas of Becket got stabbed in the back in Canterbury Cathedral. Medieval events are planned with a focus on pilgrimages, highlighting Canterbury's UNESCO World Heritage status. In July and August next year is the Lambeth Conference, a gathering of all active bishops with the Archbishop of Canterbury. It only happens once every 10 years, and next year is the date for that. It's the 400th anniversary of the Mayflower, one of the first pilgrim voyages to America, and that was organised by Robert Cushman, who was from Canterbury. It's the 75th anniversary of the UNESCO World Heritage Site of Canterbury Cathedral, St. Augustine's Abbey and St. Martin's Church, which is the oldest church in the United Kingdom.
I'm ready now.
Okay, and then it's the Folkestone Triennial, where they're expecting 135,000 visitors, and it's the 149th Great Britain Golf Open at Royal St. George's at Sandwich. So shall we talk to Jenny?
Yeah, all about, look, these bangles that I'm wearing are Jenny Rogers. I bumped into Jenny Rogers jewellery at the Hop Festival lots of years ago, eight, nine, maybe. Before I got my thyroid sorted out, Paul Andrews.
Did you have a thyroid problem? Yeah. I never knew.
Hashimoto's. And I bought this beautiful bracelet, and why I loved it, I can't really get it on my video, why I loved it was that lovely beaten silver.
But it's got the shine to it as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, listen, hasn't been cleaned.
Jenny Rogers, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Jenny, you're a jewellery designer and maker.
I try.
Yeah, and a lot of it in metal too, surprisingly. Well, I suppose jewellery is really, isn't it, normally, as opposed to plastic or paper.
Exactly. It's based in...
Grafty Green, isn't that a great name?
Grafty Green, I know Grafty Green really well. Who'd have thought it, eh? My brother-in-law grew up in Grafty Green, actually, Stream Farm. Anyway, enough of that. It's a lovely Kentish village. So tell us a little bit about you, Jenny.
How did you get started?
I was going to say that.
Well, I bet I said it so much quicker. Didn't I, Robert?
Years ago, 95, I was travelling with my partner, Chris.
Yeah.
And we went to Nepal and we both got really sick. So we were like, right, we're going to sit in the garden and chill out rather than go climbing like everybody does.
Too much Sagaloo.
It was. We were so ill. Oh, so we started going to the market and then, you know, just going around. And we found loads of stones there that they were selling, turquoise lapis. And we just ended up sitting in the garden for a month and we started making jewellery. And that's how it all started.
And so does Chris also make jewellery, the two of you?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, well, he did then.
Okay.
And then we came home and then went to France and we started making more jewellery. And then I sort of left it alone for a few years. I actually brought some of the stuff that I first made, which is so awful.
No.
I mean...
Oh, but that's lovely. So this
How many years ago?
That was in 95. I think actually Chris made that one.
That's beautiful.
So it's got the tiger's eye in it and the lapis. I mean, it's just really basic jewelry.
Tiger's eye actually has healing benefits, doesn't it? Digestive.
Does it fix your thyroid?
Not yet, but Jenny did explain when she saw me how better.
You look so much better.
I can't see it because Jules is holding on to it.
It's really not very good, but
That's how it started.
I couldn't make it.
Nor could any of the rest of us here.
Absolutely.
It's a bracelet, presumably.
No, necklace.
It's a necklace. That would be a bloody big wrist.
It's a necklace for someone with a very small neck.
But
you've got it in your fist. I can't see what you've got there.
So anyway, that's what we did first.
It's a big necklace, but it's the kind of thing that you see in hippie shops all over the place,
exactly.
Isn't it?
And then we went to France to work in France.
Right.
And we started buying hemp sort of string. And so we progressed then onto macrame with stones.
Oh, well, okay. All right.
Where were you in France?
Yeah. In Sulac-sur-Mer. We were working on a drop zone there.
Which is southwest?
West coast, right. By Royan.
Okay. Yeah.
We used to go there every year and work there.
Oh, Royan, I love Royan. Yeah. What is this turquoise stone?
It's turquoise.
That's what it's actually called. Okay, because you mentioned before a lapsang something.
Oh, no, lapis.
Lapis. And what's lapis?
It's stone from Afghanistan. You know, it's like
Lazuli, is it?
Yeah. It's not very good quality. But anyway, so then that's what we started doing that.
So you were working with natural materials, hemp rope and turquoise and lapis and other beads. What are the beads?
Coral
beads.
Wow.
But what Jules is rattling around there is metal.
That's sterling silver.
It's
sterling silver.
Sterling silver, yeah.
Yeah, it's not just metal. I love this.
So basically, this is how I started, and then I didn't do it for years.
Yeah.
And then when my daughter was about 4 or 5, I started making Swarovski crystal jewellery like this.
Right.
I sort of taught myself. Then I went on a basic silversmith course with an amazing silversmith teacher, Antoinette Luckhurst,
who's
a very good silversmith. And I did that part-time, and she taught me silversmithing and then the rest is history.
Look how sparkling that one is. That's beautiful, isn't
They're gorgeous, aren't they?
And delicate, really delicate.
Absolutely gorgeous. I'm interested. I think all of those pieces that you showed us, even though you kind of denigrated yourself in your early ones, but I'm interested.
But this is what I'm doing now.
I'm interested in your silversmithing work, because that's taken things to another level. So you went on a basic course. Did you deliberately go, do you know what, I need to learn how to silversmith?
Yeah, I did. Because I was doing stuff like this, just beading, they call it, where you're threading things.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I need to progress.
Yeah.
But I found it difficult. I didn't sort of take to it naturally. And for the last 10, no, 12, 13 years, I've been doing it. And I just really, really enjoy it.
Okay. So talk us through the art of silversmithing. I know. But
you've got a workshop at home.
Yeah, it's in my living room, much to my daughter's disgrace. I've got half a living room, which is my workshop, which is really messy. So I do it all there.
And do you get a lot of smell from?
Yeah, it stinks.
Smelting.
Yeah. It stinks.
Yeah, I got the window open because it's quite toxic silver anyway.
Wow. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I hammer all day and melt all day as well.
Just like one of the elves.
Yeah.
a mask or
no,
something.
No, I don't. I should do, but I don't. Yeah. I don't have. I only have a little torch because for health and safety reasons, I don't want a big torch in my house. I wouldn't be legally allowed to.
Have you not got room in the garden for a nice little shed?
I don't want a shed because then people might break into the shed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because you've got all your beautiful stuff.
I'm still trying to get out my question that Jules interrupted when I first started to ask you about this. I want to understand the process behind silversmithing. Yeah, because we talk about silversmithing and we look at some of the gorgeous jewellery that you've done.
Right.
But I want to know how you start that process. You know, do you go down a shop and buy some silver? What happens?
No, I go online and buy some silver. Yeah. And then,
silver's not cheap
it's
either.
Really expensive. It's like 80-90p a gram.
Yep.
So I can buy it in sheets. So it comes in like 0.5, 0.6, 0.7, 1, 2 mil sheet, or I can buy it in wire.
Yep, okay.
So that's how you buy it. And it's all nice, and it's got like a little plastic cover on it. Well, it's plastic, I'm afraid, but it's all nice and clean. And then you cut it up, and then you form it, or you fuse it. Like, that's what I've done with this, is bits of scrap.
Right.
Silver.
Cut it with what?
Well, this I've just fused scrap. So I've got loads of scrap, put the torch on it.
Yep.
It goes into a ball, then I flatten it and texture it.
It's the texture I love.
Oh, I think love
it's
this.
Beautiful.
This is so much fun.
So what's the stone in there?
So you're doing a process very similar to Alan's. It's metalwork, maybe of a more delicate nature than some of the steel and iron that Alan's working with, but it's the same kind of processes.
Yeah, definitely. It's heating stuff up and changing it.
Yeah, heat it up, smash it about.
Smash it about, melting it, fuse it. That's what I like to do.
How do you get that sheen?
That's called reticulation, where you heat the silver.
It's called a what?
It's called reticulation.
I thought you said ticulation.
Oh, so did I. Okay, reticulation. I love this, reticulation,
You heat the silver up to almost melting point, and you can actually put the torch on it, and you can see it sort of quivering.
Okay.
It's pretty amazing. Okay. That is loads of fun.
I do love that bracelet as well. I've got my eye on that. So how much would something like that cost?
This one would be £80.
That is absolutely beautiful. And how long would it take you to make something like that?
Days.
Really?
No, not joking.
Oh,
a few hours.
But it's a lot of work. The materials.
Because you have to cut the shape out, then you have to texture it, and then you have to drill the holes.
I mean, they're unique.
And then you've got to file it, which I don't really like doing, filing. And then you've got to put it in the acid to clean it, then you've got to polish it. So it's but it's loads of fun, you know.
Yeah,
you put it on, you think, well, I might keep that.
And are you making these pieces for your own pleasure and then selling them, or do you make them to commission, or is it a bit of both?
I don't do commissions, they're too stressful. I don't feel I'm a good enough silversmith to do that. And also, I had a few commissions, and then one or two turned around and said, oh, it's not exactly what I wanted.
And you've worked for days on it.
It's not Ratner's, is it? Not Ratner's, what's that?
Yeah. funnily enough, we actually had Gerald Ratner on this show
a few years
ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was one of the most poignant interviews we've ever had. Because it was a few years after Ratner's had collapsed. And he still was very badly burnt by it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was very emotional on the show.
Yeah.
Well, you would be if you'd lost £500 million. But he just launched back into the Indian market with jewellery, hadn't he?
That's right, yeah.
He'd decided to go online to sell jewellery rather than have shops, got a lot of orders from India, discovered the jewellery market in India, and went and opened shops in India, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So interesting. He emerged like the phoenix after.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Really lovely man, and really badly hurt by his throwaway line, which just shows you how easy it is to do. So you're kind of working on your own designs and making your own pieces to suit you, which presumably you then sell.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So mostly you go to shows. How do you sell?
I do sort of fairs, craft fairs from end of March till December every weekend, apart from October. And then I have six shops where I've got my showcase my jewellery.
Well, tell us where they are.
Well, I've got one in Tenterden, which is Ibbidi Bobbidi.
Which is what?
Ibbidi Bobbidi Boo.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Do you go there, Paul?
I do know Ibbidi Bobbidi Boo, yes.
Yeah, Ibbidi Bobbidi Boo. Then I've got one in Canterbury, which is Walrus and Oyster. Very nice
Which
shop.
Which road's that in?
It's opposite the cathedral shop.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. She's stalking me, you know.
Yeah. And then I've got one in Staplehurst, made by Kent. And then I've got one in Gravesend, made in Kent. Then I've got one in Headcorn, which is All Sorts. And I've got another one somewhere.
You've got hundreds. So do the
All Sorts is an antique shop, but I've got a cabinet there. Oh, hang on, Made in Ashford as well. Sorry, girls.
Made in Ashford.
Yeah, that's a really nice shop.
So do you
All Sorts is in the High Street, up by the fish and chip shop.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Not that you ever go to the fish and chip shop, do you, Paul? Not when Amanda's listening.
My mum lives in Headcorn. I go for my mum.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't have any, do you, Amanda?
No, never.
She might be listening.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so do you sell on whole better in these shops, or do you sell better at shows? Or
better at shows.
Because you're there personally, because that's what I like, the connection. When I go out and I go, oh, my friend Jenny Rogers made this. And we've sort of chatted over the years, haven't we? And she's lovely.
Just because I'm interested from a business point of view as well as from an aesthetic point of view, the shops that you display your jewellery in, is that kind of like a sale or return type of approach that you have?
Sometimes I have a cabinet fee, so I take a cabinet and they just charge me a certain amount a month.
Yep. Okay.
And some are sale or return, and some, it's different on each one.
Yeah.
It's better if I have a cabinet, like in All Sorts, they charge me whatever a month, and I get all the money.
Yeah.
Because when you pay 30%, 40%,
yeah,
you know, that's why I don't do galleries, because they take too much, because they have to.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we do a thing at Fruitworks in Canterbury where we display artists' work on the walls, because artists need their work displayed for people to buy it. And all we do is we display it on the wall. And if they sell anything, we take a small cut from the sale.
Yeah.
I like that. What's your favourite pieces to work on?
Melting, fusing, that's what I like doing.
You like a bit of melting?
I do. I like seeing it bubble.
I can imagine Jenny in a welding mask, to be honest.
Steady on now.
Yeah.
Do they have a silver mark, your pieces?
Well, I send it off to get hallmarked.
Right.
But it has to be over a certain amount. You legally, it's like 7.2 grams or something.
So it's a weight.
It's a weight thing.
Okay.
But it always looks better if you've got the hallmark on it. Mm.
Yeah.
And what about these stones? Because as far as I know, though, a lot of them have healing properties. And, you know, the turquoise is very, very healing.
Very
the
good
tiger's
throat,
eye.
Apparently.
Yeah, and the tiger's eye.
She's a witch, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do they go in fashion? Do people say, oh, we're really into turquoise this year and all that? Or do you find things... What sells well at the moment?
At the moment, our bracelets are selling well. Stones, luckily, are selling well, because I do a lot of stone necklaces. Mm. I sell a lot.
I mean, that one you're wearing. And what is the stone in it?
That's peridot.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
But I do actually like, you know, big, raw sort of amethysts, and rubies are lovely.
Mm.
I don't really go with fashion jewellery. I just make what I like, basically.
You make what you like.
Yeah.
Not this, obviously. Uh-huh.
You're not a fan of that, are you?
I really like them.
Retro.
Yeah.
How you started.
I'm just keeping it, because I thought that's where I started.
Yeah.
You know?
Cool. So what are the most popular things that you make, do you think?
Bangles are quite popular.
Yeah.
I do lots of earrings. I do cufflinks as well.
Yeah.
Oh, my new husband needs some for Christmas because he leaves them. He leaves them in the banana dish. He says, have you seen my cufflinks?
Here's an idea. I came across this a couple of years ago, or must be about 4 or 5 years ago now. I was asked to judge a young entrepreneur of the year award thing in Maidstone at the terrace. And there was a young lady there who had suffered really severe mental illness, had a very traumatic mental breakdown. And she was still very young, still in her 20s. And as part of her therapeutic recovery, she'd started working with metal. Yeah. And somebody taught her how to make the spigots for cufflinks. I don't know if spigot's the right word, but
you heard of a spigot?
With a cufflink, you have an arrangement where you've got a thing,
a little stick,
stick that you put through the and then open it to keep it locked. It looks like a spigot to me, but I don't know what you'd call it. Anyway, she was taught to make those, and then she tried to think about what she would make the actual cufflink thing about, and she had some old foreign coins, so she made them out of those.
I do those.
Yeah.
I do them with old sixpences.
Yeah,
would be lovely.
Yeah.
You could put one in a Christmas pudding at Christmas.
You could.
You could, and you could have two Christmas puddings. You'd have a cufflink.
Yeah. And interestingly, she'd made this into a little business, and I loved what she was doing. The only thing was she wasn't charging enough, as far as I was concerned. She was charging she was selling them for like £7 to £17, and I went, just, try £70 or something. Anyway, I convinced her that what she ought to do was go to Canary Wharf and sell different currencies on, because all the currency traders there were buying them. And she made a lot of money flogging, old Deutschmarks and drachmas and stuff like that to the currency traders.
In your day, it'd be florin, wouldn't it?
That's groats, my love, groats. Yeah, groats and farthings. Yeah.
But you do cufflinks that are coins?
Yeah, I do.
And earrings, presumably?
Yeah, I do. Studs. Because before the 60s, they were solid silver, the sixpences.
Mm. Yeah.
And then afterwards, they were a mix then, so you can't solder that one to a sterling silver.
Because nickel and that can tend to colour. Can it discolour?
I don't use
nickel.
Okay, well that's good.
Yeah. So it's presumably quite a busy time for you coming up to Christmas.
Very
do you
busy.
Have a backlog of stock that, or are you?
I'm ready. Yeah, I work.
Very good question.
Yeah, every day I make anyway, even if I don't have to. I just love making jewellery.
Yeah.
It relaxes me because I'm quite hectic, and it sort of calms me down. And so once I'm doing that, it's just very therapeutic. But yeah, I've got a big stock anyway because I'm a bit addicted to it as well.
But I'm addicted to your bracelets. I never don't wear these. Paul will tell you, I've had since I bought them, and I wear them every day.
They're very clean, Jules.
I just love it. I know. You offered to clean them for me, and I've never needed them.
We're almost right at the end of the show. We've literally got a couple of minutes because the 2 hours goes really quickly, and you've been talking for over half an hour, Jenny. seriously, you have.
Which is lovely. The listener, she was very worried about talking for half.
She didn't think she had enough material for 5 minutes. Yeah. Have you thought about using working in any other medium other than silver, like gold or...?
No. I've done a bit of gold. Mm. I do rings with gold, like this one, with gold blobs on it.
Right.
Because it's so expensive.
Yeah, that's
platinum.
No, so expensive. Right. Yeah. But I go around all my friends who have got divorced, obviously, and they sell me their wedding. If there's anybody out there,
just have your silver ring. Anything you want to get rid of? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't need that anymore.
You need to know Jules because she's been married so many times. She's got tons and tons of it. Yeah.
One of them's down the toilet.
Oh really?
One of the rings. Yeah.
I recycle it.
1976.
I recycle the gold to make it.
You're welcome
a happy
to go
ring.
And get it if you want.
Yeah, yeah. listen, we're going to end the show. Jenny, fascinating talking to you, as it has been with all of our guests. If people want to find out more about Jenny Rogers and your jewellery, what's the best way to do that?
I'm on Facebook, Jenny Rogers Jewellery, and Instagram, Jenny Rogers, and my website is Jenny Rogers Jewellery.
Fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
There's been an absolute pleasure. There is a link to Jenny's website and Facebook pages on the Kent Business Radio website, and it will stay there forever. Check it out. Just to let you know, we're at the end of the show. Do listen in to our sister show, The Business Bunker Extra Show, on Friday. It's Friday, 11 o'clock. And it's hosted by Amanda Flanders. And this week, Amanda's co-host is Julie Daniel, and their guest is Sandra Lamb. So that's the Business Bunker Extra Show, 11 o'clock on bizradio.co.uk and channelradio.co.uk/2 this Friday. We're at the end of another show. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to say a huge thank you to all three of our guests, Robert Woods of the Climbing Experience Maidstone, Alan F. Saunders. And I'm saying that because all of his Twitter handles and Facebook pages are Alan F. Saunders, metal sculptor.
And do follow him because I forced him to go on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. And he's famous on Twitter already now.
It was very painful.
Yeah. And the lovely Jenny Rogers with her gorgeous jewellery. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to my co-host, the lovely Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another Business Bunker show next Tuesday here at 1 o'clock. As I say, listen to the Business Bunker extra show on Friday at 11. But thank you for joining us. We'll see you all next week, and we'll be back next week. If we didn't get a chance to read out your tweet or your email, we do apologise, and we'll do that at another time.
And a big thank you to our sponsor, Cyber.
As Cyber4 Group, thank you so much for your sponsorship. We'll be back next week. We'll see you all soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.